Welcome to the Catbird Speaks, the podcast for BP Southside, Baseball Perspectives' local site covering the Chicago White Sox. I'm Colin Whitchurch, co-editor-in-chief, joined by Nick Schaefer, other co-editor-in-chief. We are guestless today, Nick.
Yeah, the young and the guestless.
The young and the guestless.
Pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you for coming up with the title of the podcast right off the bat. I don't even need to think about it now.
Cool. And that's it. Great. Good night, everybody. Yes. So it's we're recording Thursday, March 8th. There was a slow trickle of free agency signing. Spring training stuff is happening. And I suppose the biggest piece of news was Luis Robert hitting a huge grand slam to win a ridiculous game against the Reds yesterday, which was, I guess, it's pretty exciting. I mean, it's cool to get to see him, and especially get to see him succeed, even if in the context where it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I wrote at the beginning of spring training about, like, what to watch for, kind of one of those just straightforward, what to watch for this spring. And it's hard to come up with actual subjects because, you know, we can say over and over again, spring training doesn't matter. But one of the things I wrote was that it's more fun when the dude you want to see do well. You know, so sure, maybe it doesn't mean much in the long run. I think, I don't remember who he hit the grand slam off of, but I mean, if Luis Robert flames out as a prospect, no one's going to give a shit that he hit a grand slam in a spring training game in 2018. But as we wait for opening day to get here, it's definitely more exciting to see stuff like that than, say, Michael Kopech getting shelled as he did today against the Royals. So there's good and there's bad. And the spring training performances by White Sox prospects. I didn't see any of Kopech's start today. I know I was seeing some tweets from Daryl Van Schouwen, the beat writer for the Chicago Sun-Times, that he was just kind of missing his location. And, you know, it's spring training, whatever.
Yeah, there are definitely, like, you shouldn't go crazy with any spring training stuff. There's stuff that if someone's coming off an injury, you can look to see if they look healthy and recovered from that. That's obviously a real thing. Some of the guys who are further away from the majors, guys like Robert, who hasn't seen anything other than DSL pitching in like 2 years. Even before that, the Cuban League, which is, basically low minors quality pitching at this point, with some differences in style, I guess. But, even spring training pitching, I think he took like an 18th round draft pick deep or something like that, and it was not a great pitch. But he reached out, and he got it, and he had enough power to hit it out. But so seeing him, I guess Basabe is kind of both, because he's a guy who hasn't been above high A and is coming off of a minor injury. So to see him looking good running around in the outfield is a nice thing. Stuff like that's always good. But I'm not going to take too much away from Kopech getting knocked around. And certainly the worse, I feel like the principle is like the worse the Royals get, like the better they'll do against the White Sox best players. I feel like that's the thing. So maybe that principle is all that's in play there. Maybe that means Kopech's going to be a mega ace and get destroyed by, like, I don't know, Chesler Cuthbert or whatever for the rest of the time.
One of the things I do like about spring training, and I wrote about this too, is that I feel like more so than in regular season games, you do get kind of more honest answers about kind of what guys are working on and different specifics of a start, because you're not going out there and people readily admit, it's like, I'm not going out there, especially someone like Kopech, someone who's not as close to the majors. Like, I'm not going out there trying to dominate. I'm going out there working on specific things that maybe Don Cooper or whomever, you know, told him to work on. And the thing that the story of the spring for him has been that he's been working on his changeup, and he's been working on throwing it more and getting more comfortable with it. And so hearing him talk after each start about how that's going is definitely more interesting than the kind of normal, well, he's got to command his fastball and, you know, I feel good out there kind of thing, which you still get a little bit of, but you actually do get some sense of what the directive is for certain players during these spring training games.
There's still, just even going over to MLB.com, some of these headlines are pretty entertaining around the league. Like, Vlad Jr. had apparently had 4 hits today. Syndergaard struck out 7 guys in a row. Yeah, that's cool. And Syndergaard's another guy where it's, you know, if he's looking healthy, that's a positive sign
for sure.
As a baseball fan.
Oh, we'll get not into necessarily him in the fantasy segment.
Yeah. So other than that, no, just hoping these guys don't get hurt. I suppose there's the back end of the roster. Sometimes spring training can – I feel like it's more pertinent for a team that's trying to win in the short – you know, win this year, might make decisions based on use spring training as a tiebreaker. You know, how's this guy look for the 25th man or the second lefty out of the bullpen sort of thing. Jordan Stevens has looked good. This spring training, to me, I don't see how, you know, even if he continues to dominate, I don't see how he leapfrogs AAA. I think you send him to AAA as a starter and look to maybe have him on the short list of guys who come up if you need, you know, when you need somebody in May or June or so on.
He did give up a home run today to someone named Beck for the Rangers and took the loss in the other split squad game today. So
it wasn't Chris Beck.
It wasn't Chris Beck. It was there's a Beck for the Rangers. His name is Preston Beck. Stevens deep in the eighth inning, and he's 27 years old, a fifth round pick in 2012 out of UTA. So sorry, Jordan Stevens took the loss today.
Hey, he's got 34 home runs in 2,400 minor league plate appearances. So we're talking like what, 30 raw? I mean, that's
easy.
Yeah.
So I guess what you were talking about though does transition into we can talk about a little bit of White Sox news that came earlier this week with kind of their first wave of spring training roster moves, reassignments. Nothing too surprising. You wrote about it earlier this week. I guess the most noteworthy things to come out of it were Charlie Tilson and Thiago Vieira being reassigned to minor league camp, both of which make sense. A lot of us hoped that Tilson would prove himself healthy and effective enough to maybe be able to play some center this year, and he still probably will. You know, I mean, I guess the best news out of Tilson this spring is that he's played in games, which is something that we haven't been able to say about him in a while. And it makes sense to start him in AAA. They seem to like Adam Engel, and, you know, Tilson hasn't played in a meaningful baseball game in more than a year and a half now. So have him be the opening day starting center fielder in Charlotte. And if he proves he can stay healthy for a couple months, then I don't see any reason why he won't be playing for the White Sox at some point this summer.
Yeah. And the corollary to what I was saying earlier about teams, if they're trying to compete in the short term, you know, you're trying to optimize your 25-man roster out of the gate, probably, generally speaking. But all teams are going to take contract status into consideration, especially a team in the White Sox situation. You've got when I was going through it, Vieira at first glance, when I saw he was already assigned to minor league camp, I was saying, oh, huh, I thought he had a chance to make the roster. And then when I looked and remembered that they brought in all these veterans and auditions as well, you know, Xavier Cedeno, Jean-Marc Gomez, and Bruce Rondon, to name a few. Hector Santiago's there, too. When you see all that, it's like, look, you know, Vieira's got stuff he can still work on in AAA. He hasn't really been in the organization very long. He's still got stuff to improve.
You see 20 commands slapped on him from sometime, you know, at least before last year.
Yeah, and his off-speed stuff is not great. So it's as soon as I looked at the list and the numbers, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, like you send that dude to AAA. It's kind of nice that they do have enough guys here where I'm not worried about them like getting through the year. They seem to have enough dudes here. Like Hector Santiago's all-star days are probably behind him, but he's probably more competent even than probably get better results even than a Mike Palfrey did last year or something like that. So, you know, you have stuff to throw at the innings thing. Like we've talked about before, that's the aspect that can get hairy, and you don't want to have to lean harder on your younger dudes to try to cover that up. You'd rather just throw your Santiago at it.
Yeah, and they did what they should do in those terms after trading all those relievers last year. It was like, well, you know, they've got to rebuild their bullpen, and it wasn't necessarily rebuild the bullpen in the sense of bring in a whole bunch of good guys. It's bring in a bunch of guys who can eat innings and get out and not, you know, kill your pitching staff. And I think they did that admirably. You know, they didn't pay a high cost for Soria or Avilan. So it's got a good mix of dependable veterans with the young guys who you want to, you know, take a further look at, like the Aaron Bummers of the world.
Yeah, and even, you know, if Manaea and Greg Infante are what they were last year, if those are your two best relievers like they were at the end of the year last year, then that's pretty gross. But behind Jones, Soria, Avilan, you know, you got that blend of Infante, Manaea, Farquhar is even fine. You know, yeah. those are all perfectly adequate, you know, fourth, fifth, sixth guys out of the bullpen. So that's all fine. Soria and Avilan are professionals, so should be good.
You know,
it won't be hideous.
You know, Chris Volstead has thrown 7 2/3 of shutout baseball this spring.
I mean, Volstead's been extremely helpful to the organization.
Oh,
I hope they're
absolutely
good to hit, because he's eaten a lot of innings, and he even looked decent. He could wind up pitching some innings out of the bullpen or grabbing a spot start this year.
How old would you guess he is?
I think he's like 30.
Yeah, you're close. He's 31.
Yeah.
He's only a few months older than me. A few months older than either of us.
He pitched like he was 34 when he was 24. So, you know, it's weird because I think he's like a really big dude, but he's been a soft tosser.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's 6'8". I mean, he's Alec Hansen's size, essentially.
It's almost like the Chris Young phenomenon where the guy's gigantic, but just doesn't have velocity.
Yeah.
So there we are.
No, so that's the podcast.
Yeah. There were some, you know, I think some people were, I actually even saw some people on Twitter were stumping for Alfredo Gonzalez, who got sent down, and dude can't hit at all. If he ever does learn to hit at all.
He's like 24 with a 600 something OPS in Double A last year, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you're really agonizing over Kevin Smith versus Narvaez. I mean, agonizing, quote unquote. That's a decision you're making. Gonzalez was never. I mean, you might even send him to Double A just because presumably Smith or Narvaez is getting the bulk of the reps at Triple A.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. Not too many decisions to make. I mean, trying to keep guys healthy. Get the younger players looks at major league competition, even if they're not going 100%. I think I read that Luis Robert got a hit off of Kenley Jansen cutter, which is kind of neat.
Oh, nice.
That is tough. In probably a backfield or something. I don't know, some sort of side session or something like that.
Alec Hansen struck out Joey Votto in a real Cactus League game, I think, last week too. Swinging.
Yeah, I don't think Votto was trying to strike out to work on something either. So, you know.
Exactly. The one guy I did want to mention, if we're going to kind of talk through some of these spring performances, how much they matter, how much they don't, is Carson Falmer. Kind of on the negative side, he's not looked great this spring. He's thrown two innings. He's thrown two innings. He's walked five batters and allowed five earned runs. Is it just white noise, or, I mean, he's starting the year in the rotation, right?
I think so. I recently started seeing stuff where Santiago might look. Fulmer did not pitch well in AAA last year. You know, I know he was a first round pick out of college. You know, top 10 pick out of Vanderbilt, and you think an SEC frontline starter like that would move faster, and I guess he got to AAA quickly, but
even if Santiago starts the year in the rotation, then I mean he's the Rodon replacement. That's still five guys with Falmer, or unless I'm forgetting someone.
Well, doesn't it go? It would go Shields, Miguel Gonzalez, Giolito.
I forgot about Migo.
Yeah, Giolito Lopez, and then it's Santiago versus Falmer for the fifth starter spot. I think it's good that you brought it up because it is actually one of the few, like, competition type things. Fulmer is so strange because he can hold the velocity. You know, he can go, he can hold his velocity into the fifth, sixth inning. He's got so much movement on his, especially on his cutter. He's got so much movement on his pitches. And so you've got this sort of ephemeral thing, certainly as a viewer. It's like, well, he just can't put it where he wants to. And as a viewer, it's not clear to me, you know, why that is. I know he's like a violent delivery, but, you know, some guys just have, you know, why could Cliff Lee put it exactly where he wanted all the time? So I don't know. Until he, until his command improves, I don't see, like, I haven't seen his two spring training innings, and this is on the heels of us talking about how it doesn't matter. So, like, no, it doesn't matter. But, like, it is of a piece with the same issue that's been going on with him, I suspect.
Yeah.
You know, he just doesn't have, right? I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I don't know if, again, we're talking about two innings, but five walks.
I know. But I'm going back even into last year, too.
Yeah, no, in the last year, that totally makes sense. My thought is, can he do anything this spring that concerning that they just kind of factor that in more in their decision making than, you know, him looking kind of decent in September last year, and the fact that, let's face it, it's more important to learn what you have in Fulmer as soon as possible than have Hector Santiago out there as a starter. Like, is he gonna? Could he perform badly enough that they say, we're going to send you back to AAA because we still don't think you're ready for the majors, even though they have all this evidence that, you know, I'm not going to say evidence that he's definitely ready, but evidence that they want to get a further look at him than send him to AAA.
I just don't think it's that hard of an argument to make. Like, if I know he's a competitive guy, he gets rave reviews for his makeup, so you shouldn't be worried about him getting, you know, toxic or down or losing confidence or something. I mean, the fact is, I don't look. We're talking about a guy who had ERA above six in Charlotte, or above. Sorry, that was his look in the wrong column. It was 5.8 in Charlotte last year. He hasn't mastered the level. Yeah, he had a couple nice starts to close the year against some really crappy lineups, but I just don't. If he also gets shelled in spring for the rest of spring training, what's, you know, you audition Santiago, and who knows, maybe you can flip him for something before Rodon comes back, or maybe you flip him if Fulmer gets off to a good start at AAA. But, you know, this is an organization that coordinates its pitching coaching from throughout, you know, from top to bottom. So the idea that he's going to be divorced from the major league coaching staff doesn't really concern me all that much. I just think it's easy to forget. Like, this dude got shelled at AAA last year. He's 24. It's not that weird if you start him at AAA regardless of your major league needs.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think, yeah, and you make a good point about, especially when you think about, with all these prospects the White Sox have said, you know, you got to check all the boxes before you're ready. You know, with Moncada last year, it was, you got to check all the boxes before we decide you're ready. And maybe Fulmer still has some boxes to check. You know, maybe they want to say, I mean, it'll be more complex than this, but they want to say, do it consistently in Charlotte, and then we'll bring you up to the majors. You know, last year it was more end of season. You know, the competition's over, the minor league season's coming to an end, and we traded every pitcher that we rostered at the beginning of the season kind of thing. But this year, it's, you know, you still got some shit to work on, so we're going to send you to Charlotte, and we have another option instead of you, so sit down there and keep working.
Well, here's a good, I think, a good contrasting example. Like, Michael Kopech is going to start the year in AAA. They've already been clear about the fact that he's not breaking camp with the major league team, and he wasn't going to.
Yes.
But that's a dude who needs to work on control, command, and his third pitch. But he could go down to AAA and just destroy people with his fastball and slider and not improve on those things he doesn't need to work on and still put up really shiny numbers in AAA. Then it becomes, and that's, he's also a guy, you know, I don't know him personally, but we have some evidence. I've, you know, just scouting reports and obviously incidents that he's a really competitive guy. He's, I certainly don't want to get pejorative with it, but you know, he's emotional, I guess. I don't know. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
you know,
that's the least controversial way you could put it, for sure.
That happened. I've read about him getting visibly upset on the mound. So you might have a situation where it's a guy who's saying, look, like, I'm killing this level. I'm ready. Let's go. And somebody who might get frustrated in Kopech, that's harder. That's harder because you're saying to him, no, look, you need to throw your changeup 40 times this game or something like that and show us you can locate it and before we're ready to trust you against Major League hitting. Fulmer is not that. I mean, he doesn't have the shiny ERA to point to or anything like that. You know, you don't have to even, I don't think it's a complicated conversation. He's, and like I said, he's a great makeup dude as well, supposedly. So you should be able to just be like, look, Carson, like, show us you can get AAA hitters out and we'll talk.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. And the presence of Santiago, and especially, you know, again, I say spring training stats all we want, but Santiago's also looked good this spring. You know, he's struck out 9 and walked 1 in 8 innings. I don't know why I keep citing spring training stats. But, you know, if he's healthy and he's effective and you would rather trust him to handle the fifth spot in the rotation than Fulmer, then, and Fulmer continues to look sucky all spring, then I'm all for it. People will say why, you know, it's the same thing with like the whole, oh, should they sign another outfielder thing, you know, instead of throwing Delmonico Rangel out there. And it's maybe they view them as better served in another situation. And yeah, that's different than is Fulmer ready for the rotation or not. But it's more complex than just we want to get this guy reps, you know, with Fulmer or with any of the position players. It's about, you know, what guys need to work on and what roles you see them in going forward.
Yeah. I mean, Baseball Reference has it that Rodon is unlikely to make his debut before the beginning of June.
Yeah, so June 1st is what Han said. I think Han even so much as said that he wouldn't expect him back until June, at least June 1st.
Yeah, so, you know, you've got a good chunk of innings between now and then. So, you know, Fulmer is obviously, as they indicated in the last year, somebody that is on their short list to call up when they need somebody. But, unless he just shoves, I don't see, you know, I don't think he's not to sound like a jerk. It's just, he hasn't earned it yet. I don't think he's not ready
for sure. So we're 23 minutes into this podcast, and I've cited way too many spring training stats so far.
Hey, they're the new stats.
So there's still a bunch of free agents out there.
Yeah, as you know, one of the last times we recorded, the Brewers went nuts. So hopefully, us recording will yield some movement. I saw
there's more movement going on in the NFL right now. Aqib Talib just got traded to the Rams.
Oh, that guy. Yeah. I feel very confident saying that guy is like a really bad dude.
Yeah.
And not in like the, you know, not like the cool way, not the way like Samuel L. Pulp Fiction's a bad dude.
Here you go, though, for real. John Heyman tweet this second. Sources, Moustakas and Royals are close to a deal.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. They're supposed to be close. Moustakas. It's some of it is, you know, part of this weird winter, but Moustakas as a player individually, he's a one-dimensional player. He's had collapse years before. He's had a catastrophic knee injury. He's a big guy. I don't know how long he's going to be usable at third base. And for all that, like the, I don't know, collusion or whatever arguments are stronger to me when you start talking about, like, how come the Brewers haven't signed a pitcher yet? Or how come, you know, any number of teams haven't signed a pitcher? Because you can always slot. Yeah, like, every rotation has room for Arrieta. You know, everyone's got opinions about him. He's had a weird career, but, like, every rotation, he's an upgrade on every rotation in the majors. But, like, third base, not everyone needs a third baseman. Like,
And also those one-dimensional sluggers are not nearly as valuable as they used to be. We've seen that time and time again. It's, you know, hitting 30 home runs in a season isn't that impressive anymore, as strange as that is to say. I can't remember which, if it was his WRC plus or something like that, was like 112 or something like that. It was like, for a dude who hit 38 homers or however many homers he hit, 40, he wasn't a huge offensive plus. He's not.
Yeah.
It drove me nuts. I was so ready for, you know, some sort of, you know, every single time there was a Moustakas to the White Sox rumor, it drove me nuts because, you know, to put it bluntly, I wanted nothing to do with the dude. You know, I don't care if Yolmer is the long-term answer at third base or not. He is not a good enough player to command. Like, if the White Sox were going to go all in for some sort of long-term, high-priced free agent type that, you know, kind of in the vein of when the Cubs signed John Lester or whatever, I'd want them to do it for a player better than Mike Moustakas.
Oh my God.
It's like when the Machado rumors happened, I talked myself into that where I was like, okay, you know, Machado is an A-list free agent next year and he's going to command a ton of money. And if they can swing a trade for him and then lock him up long-term to add to the rebuild, then hell yeah, let's go. But if they were going to do the same thing for Moustakas, even if it was like on a 3-year deal or whatever, I'd just be like, oh, why?
Yeah, I think he's going to have to move to first base eventually. I just don't see, his bat's not special, so I don't get it. But the Machado thing never made sense to me because he's not going to sign an extension before he hits free agency. I mean, maybe you get a window to convince him that he likes it there better. But, I mean, clearly there's no guarantee of that. I mean, obviously, like Jeff Samardzija didn't. Thank God. But it's odd because if you're an organization that believes in Tim Anderson and Machado said he wants to play short now, I guess you could move Anderson to center or something, who knows, maybe that'd be great, but it struck me as weird to torpedo the team, to hoard prospects, and then immediately flip them for a rental who doesn't, I don't know, I'm also sort of the low man on Machado. He kind of, I think people overlook his flaws a lot, like, and maybe we'll get into this with, maybe it's just, you know, his age or his, like, he's an elite glove at third. I don't know how, I actually can't really comment on his defense at short. I think you're losing what makes him special at short. And his bat is very good, but it's like very good for an elite defender. It's not very good, like, period. So,
yeah, I do get it just because it's easy to sour on him when people put him, you know, lump him in with, you know, Bryce Harper's free agency or Harper and Trout in general when it comes to young talents, because Machado is a very, very good young talent. But I think you do get a little crazy when you compare him to those two.
Yeah, I mean, he's a career 116 OPS. He's a career OPS of 805, which granted he came up super young and that's really impressive. He may, you know, there may be still improvement there. He's also messed up his knees a couple times already, which is kind of like, you know, collar tugging, like, ooh, like, I don't know, but, no, I mean, whoever, you know, he's a MVP candidate type player, but it's just, if you're going to go all in for somebody, that he makes me uneasy for the White Sox, cause they've never shot a bullet like that. And if they do, I assume they only have one. And, I don't know if that's where I'd want to shoot it, but, if I can stretch that analogy painfully.
Well, you know, we haven't done enough.
Like, who's going to sign? But who would sign? Like, what contending team was going to sign Moustakas? I mean, I guess you could do, like, the Red Sox could have and shifted Devers to first, but, like,
or just signed him and DH'd him, but then you'll have JD and you have Hanley, and it's for a team that was starving for offense, it's weird how little kind of positional flexibility that team has.
Yeah, and like the other, even the second tier playoff teams, I mean, obviously, like, the best teams the Indians don't need them, the Astros don't need them, and flipping over, you know, the Nationals don't need them, Cubs certainly don't, Brewers don't, Travis Shaw is probably better straight up, you know, the Dodgers don't, like, all these teams don't need him. And then even the second tier competitors, like the teams that are going to try to, you know,
the Giants, you know,
the Orioles don't need him. The Giants don't need him. The Blue Jays certainly don't. Like, who's the team that has any aspiration of winning more than 81 games this year who could use him? Maybe the Yankees, but like
maybe the Mariners.
Kyle Seager?
Yeah, but first, who's playing? Oh, I guess who's at first base for them?
Is it Healy? But I mean, yeah, like he'd probably be an upgraded first base. Does Moustakas want to sign with the Mariners to play first base?
I don't know.
And if you're the Mariners and you're looking for a first base, like if you're looking for a first baseman, you could have just signed like Duda or Logan Morrison or Alonso, like any of those dudes who would have been cheaper.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
Can I just say, I just saw a tweet. It went past my timeline. I'm not even going to know who to cite, but someone just said that the Royals were able to bring back two of their four big free agents in Mike Moustakas and Alcides Escobar.
Yeah, they brought back number three and four.
Yeah.
Of those four. So wait, is it confirmed? Is that?
Well, no, it doesn't. It's not actually confirmed, but it's seems like it's about to happen. So we can do a little bit of a throwback here and do some Royals bashing and say how hilarious it's going to be that they're going to re-sign Mike Moustakas and be terrible this year.
Yeah, I mean I mean if we're going to do some Royals bashing, I mean what about their weird like porn crusade?
I didn't click on any of those links. I'll be honest with you. I read a bunch of the headlines and I was just like, whoa, okay, time to move on.
Yeah, I wasn't clicking on those at work, certainly. here's sort of a pet theory. Maybe this is a good place for it, but, you know, Dayton Moore's regime has been there like a long time now. I mean, I could pull it up. I mean, and, you know, he spent a long time hoarding, you know, the top 10 draft picks. And when did he come? He came in after... Was it 2007?
I couldn't tell you.
So they won 86, 89, 95, 81, 80. I mean, that's a solid run for sure. Obviously, you know, two World Series appearances, one of which, like, the first one, I mean, you know, credit to them for getting there and all that. It wasn't like, it's not like they were bad, but, like, they were perilously close to just getting eliminated in the wild card game.
And they were also perilously close from winning the damn thing, which is
insane. Yeah, for sure. They could have won back. They could have very easily won back to back. I'm not trying to pretend that didn't happen.
Yeah.
But you know, as it really looks like they're entering another dark age. Oh, it really does. I mean, they just the farm system is empty. There's nothing at the major league level that's really interesting. And so you're in a situation where Dayton Moore is still this like super well regarded like genius in the industry or something like that, when he's a guy who might have like what, a 3-year run out of like 15 years. Like a 15 out of 15 years, he might have three that are like really good and like a couple that are okay. That's like awful.
It is.
And you know, Kenny Williams is like this running joke now, and I'm interested to see if we can like line up Kenny Williams' tenure versus Dayton Moore's and be like, well, which was better, really? Is it odd that the African American GM is like the laughingstock and this like weird white guy gets like sainted? That seems, you know, I don't know. It's probably a product of many factors, but that just doesn't really sit well with me at all.
Yeah. I'm with you there.
The best farm system of all time into like a couple decent corner infielders and a brittle number three starter, like sweet guys.
Definitely. So it does sound like it's going to be a 1-year deal for Moustakas. So cool. It sounds like he lost the staring contest, I guess, in that sense that him and Boris were seeking a long-term deal, and it sounds like he caved and is going to come back on a 1-year deal and then re-enter free agency in a year.
I mean, good luck against
Right.
Josh Donaldson and Manny Machado.
Right.
On that free agent market. Yeah. But, yeah, I obviously a lot can change. You know, who knows, maybe the Red Sox decide they need to move Devers to first after this year. Maybe, some of these teams that are rebuilding now have another year closer to contention, and they say, "Oh yeah, like Mizdakis totally fits our needs."
Well, yeah, and there's going to be such a bidding, and there's going to be such a bidding war that maybe he's more like a consolation prize. You know, teams that go all in for Harper, Machado, or whoever, and lose out, that they set their sights on him. So maybe entering free agency in a stacked year oddly will work in his favor than this strange year of whatever's happening with. If there's collusion or whatever.
Yeah. And maybe, yeah, a lot of these teams are keeping their powder dry for next year, like you said, and we'll have extra money sloshing over. I think a lot of teams will reset their luxury tax. So yes. Maybe some of it, maybe the Yankees don't care anymore. Maybe Gleyber Torres has solidified himself at second base and Brandon Drury's awful and Miguel Andujar can't play third. And they're like, all right, whatever. I mean, they're going to get Machado, but maybe some team like that or some, like I said, an up and coming team, maybe the White Sox are in a position next year where they're like, we just need a decent player at third. And there he is. Maybe he'll have better luck next winter. I don't know. I hope he gets a high value 1 year deal this year just for his sake, but.
We talked about, the rotation a lot a few minutes ago with the whole Carson Palmer, Hector Santiago thing. And with all the starting pitchers sitting out there, if Moustakas is settling for a 1 year deal, I don't know how much that's going to correlate to the markets of like Cobb or Lynn or anything like that. But, I feel like for like 5 podcasts in a row, we've said, what if they just sign 1 or 2 of those guys? And,
yeah.
And it's still, I still kind of feel that way. It's like,
yeah.
What if they just go out and, I don't think Arrieta necessarily. Maybe. I don't know. But I still am like, man, just freaking sign one of them.
With Cobb and Lynn, and some of these players, some of their price tags, this is really weird. Neil Walker is still sitting out there due to deserve more money than he got. But when you go to some of the individual players, I will say, the thing that we can't know from the outside is what the medicals look like. Certainly guys like Cobb and Lynn.
Yeah.
There could be, good faith concerns there in terms of their health. Judah was another guy who's got chronic back problems, and maybe they're worse than we realize. That was even something with Todd Frazier. I mean, people were chalking it up to his hometown discount, and that's certainly a huge factor. I'm sure it's a huge factor for him, but also, his back is being held together with hope and duct tape. So, that is something that exists that we just can't know. Even if you were a radiologist and you had their MRIs, you might still not feel sure about how things would proceed. Some guys can hold up and some can't. I mean, Beltre was a guy who had all kinds of nagging injuries, and he's looking as close to immortal as you're going to get for a player. But, oh yeah, that's another team that doesn't need a third baseman. Before I forget, yeah. Just in terms of the White Sox, I will say to dovetail back to our earlier conversation where we're talking about third base, a player who is showing us something in spring training, I don't really care that he's hitting like 500 or whatever for the sake of the numbers, but Tyler Saladino hitting well might mean that he's healthy again.
Well, he hit well last spring too, though.
Sure, but if he's healthy again, he's not that far removed from being potentially a solid regular for the short term. So
for sure, there's hope there, undoubtedly.
He could win the third base job. I mean, he's much more of a natural third baseman than Yulmer is. Yulmer's much more of like a second base short type guy.
I do want to say I was just looking at Lance Lynn's baseball reference page, and I like to go down to the similarity scores, and his top two most similar pitchers are Matt Latos and Josh Johnson.
Josh Johnson.
Man, he was so good. Loved Josh Johnson. I was really proud of myself the year he broke out and then subsequently got hurt in like June and never pitched again. I believe that was the same year that Justin Verlander won the Cy and the MVP. So this would have been 2011.
2010, he was also a monster,
yeah,
too.
2010, yeah. He was awesome. Finished fifth in the Cy Young voting. And so I decided in 2011, and this will tie into our fantasy conversation a little bit. In 2011, I decided that the two pitchers I was going after, because they weren't like first-round type dudes, but they were really highly regarded pitchers. But I said, I'm going to go in and I'm going to draft Josh Johnson and Justin Verlander. And I did, and I tore it up for the first, you know, month or two of the season. And then Josh Johnson went hurt. Or before Josh Johnson got hurt, right before he got hurt, I traded Justin Verlander for, I think, like Carlos Gonzalez or something like that. And then Johnson got hurt, and Verlander went on to have, like, one of the best pitching seasons of this century. And so that's what always comes into my head when I think of Josh Johnson, is something fantasy related. Oh. That dude ruled.
Oh, yeah. I had him in 2010, and I was in first place for the whole season, then slipped to the second at the end. Another fact about that season, Josh Johnson was unhittable, and then he got hurt at the end of the year. But yeah, so happy to segue into fantasy real quick, just because it is a weeknight, so I can't go on as long as our Sunday casts. But
well, how do you want to do this? I like talking fantasy on the podcast. I think we don't do it enough, so I want to start. Should we talk about? Should we tie in some White Sox value? You know, who's, because I've in preparation for the draft for my league, which is a 12 team head to head, 7 hitting categories, 7 pitching categories. I've been doing mock drafts like every freaking day because I'm so excited for my draft. And the guy that I have been kind of winding up with in that is a White Sox has been Moncada. He's 164th overall in ESPN's top 300, and you know, relative to what he could be, he's actually rated right next to Ronald Acuna. Coincidentally, Moncada's 164, Acuna's 165 on this list. And relative to where he's going and kind of his potential, I love him as a potential fantasy option, and maybe I'm kind of a sucker for taking those kind of really high ceiling guys who haven't arrived yet in fantasy. I don't know if
that can be. It's always tempting and it's fun. I think Moncada is a really potentially really good value bet because if you look at, you know, his high profile arrival in 2016 and he got, you know, crushed, and that didn't, I don't really take much away from that, but a lot of people, I think it influenced their evaluation of him. And then, you know, last year he had the low batting average, certainly right out of the gate too. I mean, narratives get formed really quickly. I want to look this up, but, cause like Rafael Devers came out of the gate like a house on fire. Like he hit so well right away and everyone was like, oh my God, like he was the better one. He was better than Moncada. And you know, he might be too, but like, they didn't finish that far apart. Like Moncada started out really cold and he got really hot and Devers cooled off. They wound up, 70 points of OPS, but you know, nothing crazy.
No.
Moncada obviously could do a lot for you in the counting stats, and he's going to play every day at second. I mean, Tim Anderson's kind of the same, where you don't know what he's going to do necessarily, but he's, even his downside from a fantasy perspective, certainly in a traditional like 5x5 one, he's going to hit for an average that won't kill you. He'll hit for a little bit of power and he'll steal bases. Like that's perfectly the low end. It's hard to imagine him like killing you there, especially where you're going to get him. Moncada's got, like, to me, even if he just repeats what he did last year across a full season, you're looking at 18 home runs, 10 stolen bases, you know, with obviously more room for a lot of improvement there, like breakout potential.
Yeah.
So there's definitely potential value there.
There's that position is such that I don't know what it is about second base, but that ends up always being the position that I punt in a fantasy draft. I feel like 5 years in a row, I ended up with Placido Polanco as my starting second baseman. Cause I'd pick him up at the end of the draft and he'd hit like 320 with not much else, and I was fine with it. Yeah. You know, so I, you know, it's like I never end up with, I won't end up with Altuve or Jose Ramirez, or who does have second base eligibility still, or Brian Dozier, D. Gordon, or anything like that. Last year, I waited on second base and ended up with Jonathan Scope, who was awesome. And,
oh, yeah.
And this year, Moncada's the 16th ranked second baseman. You know, he's behind Chris Taylor, Ozzie Albies, Marwin Gonzalez. He's ranked right ahead of Ian Happ, Ian Kinsler, Paul DeJong. So 16th ranked second baseman relative to his value. And obviously, we're both going to be a little bit biased when talking about White Sox for fantasy value, but that's just, that's the one player every single time I've done a mock draft this year that I've ended up with one White Sox player has been Moncada.
The dude that I like as a value play is Wellington Castillo. I think he's one of the last catchers where I'd feel strongly about both his playing time and his ability to hit.
10th ranked catcher on this site.
I've done some mocks and just sort of like poked around with trying to generate my own positional rankings or where I want to go with things. And I don't know. I mean, I think the White Sox have backups that they like, and catcher is a position that if you don't get, like, if you don't feel like jumping on Gary Sanchez, you might wind up wanting to wait. And he's a guy who you could wait on and be perfectly happy with. So one thing that the biggest caveat when people ask me fantasy questions, certainly in real life, I always ask a million questions back about their league format. So, and I hate that I'm going to be talking about this specifically because I think my draft is on Saturday and at least one person in the league listens to this.
You can give away as much as you want.
Yeah, but in that draft.
Yeah, so what's your format?
That format's a points league. So it's kind of what I like about that is basically you don't need to worry about the shape of the production you're getting as long as you're getting it. So, you know, you could just ignore stolen bases entirely if you want, because it doesn't, you know, stolen bases are a vector for points, but you don't need them. And I think that's cool because it contrasts with the other major league that I play in, where that's like a classic roto format. But that league, you know, you have a bench, you're making weekly moves, but the roster shape is, it's like, you know, one at each. The only infield position that's double counted is there's a middle infield slot.
Okay.
There's no corner infield slot. There is a utility slot, and there's four outfielders. But it's a 12-team league, and I found myself with just the way third base has shaken out. The 12th best third baseman is still, like, really good. You know, like, there's crazy good third baseman.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about Moustakas. Moustakas is 13th. Travis Shaw's 12th, at least on these rankings I'm looking at. So, yeah, there's a ton of depth at third base.
So if you find positions like that where it's like, look, most teams are only going to draft one dude. I mean, obviously, if, like, you're in the, you know, sixth round and you already have a third baseman, but, like, Justin Turner is still there, like, yeah, slap him in your utility slot, I guess, but teams aren't going to be prioritized. You know, you can wait on it probably and be fine. Like, Devers came up last year and was crushing it, and I was like, I don't, nobody, like, needs it.
Yeah.
Because in that league, the replacement level for third base was really high.
Jake Lamb is the 18th ranked third baseman.
By contrast, but the other league I play in is my dad's. It's like 40-something years old. You have a 25-man roster and no bench, and you just play all your dudes constantly. And that league has – it's 25-man, 13 teams, and there's a third base slash catcher slot. So you're almost certainly – there's basically like two third base slots for some reason.
Yep. I've been in a league like that before. It died, unfortunately, but I miss it.
And so there, even with the depth of third base, you might be looking at it and saying, well, you know, that and utility slots and the no bench, like – I kind of, you know, you're going to get down to the 25th, 30th, maybe even more third baseman, and maybe bump that position up instead of waiting. So these are the types of things you should really look at, see where these positions drop off in your league, and then look at what's kind of there. Because the way you make mistakes, in my opinion, is not necessarily at the top. I mean, if you're like, ooh, I don't know if I should get Jose Ramirez or Chris Bryant, like, you'll be fine. They're both great. Like, you'll be fine. but, like, I think when you start reaching for positions because you're not comfortable enough with the fallback options, that's where you start getting yourself into trouble. because you're like, well, this is the last third baseman. Because if you don't know the deeper options well enough, you can start freaking out. And that's, I don't know, that's where you reach.
Yeah, I kind of see that. I kind of see that a little bit at first base this year. Like a couple mocks I did where I waited on first base and I ended up with like Ian Desmond was the top rated available first baseman. And I'm like, oops, you know? So I do agree with you. I think that people worry a little bit about filling all their positions, and especially in leagues where, like you said, you know, how you get your production doesn't matter that much. And my league, in my league, it does matter how you get your production a little bit, because we have 14 categories and it's head to head, and you want to win as many categories each week as you can. It's a little odd. It's a league I've been running for, man, almost 2 decades at this point, you know, since I was in like middle school.
Oh, wow.
It's, you know, my dad and my brother-in-law and then a bunch of my buddies and a bunch of my dad's buddies are in it. And I think one of the reasons I've been so focused on fantasy this year is because that league has historically come down to like me and my dad almost every single year. And last year he won the league.
Really?
Last year he won the league and I didn't even make the playoffs. I had like my worst fantasy baseball year ever. So I've been so freaking focused on it. So yeah, it's a little bit of an odd league, because like I said, there's 14 categories. So it's a little bit more than usual. And the thing that I'm trying to figure out, and maybe you can help me and maybe in turn help some of the listeners along the way, is so last year what killed me is that I waited on pitching, and I usually wait on pitching because you can build a pretty decent rotation, you know, without getting Clayton Kershaw or whomever. But last year I waited too long and I ended up with my two best starting pitchers, I think, were Tanaka and Danny Duffy, both of whom were hurt and ineffective at random points during the season. So this year I have the 12th pick in the snake draft, which so I've got back-to-back picks each round. And in a lot of the mocks I did, I ended up where the 12th pick came along and the two best players available were Clayton Kershaw and Max Scherzer. So part of me thinks maybe I'll just grab both of those pitchers and then not have to worry about pitching the rest of the draft. But go ahead.
I certainly think – yeah, I mean, I typically am – better at picking pitchers and I'm picking hitters generally. So I wind up trying to compensate for that by waiting on pitchers. Also, if you're talking about the waiver wire, I feel like historically, maybe not in the last couple of years, but historically there's more breakout pitchers in a given year and pitchers who are falling apart, like the turnover's higher than on offense. So A, it makes the investment more risky if you're putting more resources into it, like higher end draft picks, auction dollars, whatever. So that can hurt if you get burned on that. And if you wait, that means if you pay attention to the waiver wire free agency, you can, there's more turnover on major league rosters. Like more guys are getting chances at pitching. So you have more opportunities to pick up players there. So that's a virtue. I do think there are drop offs, you know, where there's a big gap between, you know, the last guy available and the next one. And I think that there is a class of number one starters who are like clearly better than everyone else. As much as I've been a Kershaw stan my whole, you know, since he's been in the majors, like I love that guy. His back freaks me out a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm going to own him in any leagues this year, just because I don't see myself in it. Maybe in the points league where having the injured guys where the waiver options are better. It doesn't hurt you as much, but if you're in a position to draft Kershaw, you're probably also in a position to draft Scherzer, Sale, Kluber, or maybe even Syndergaard. And
that's why part of me thinks you go, cause okay. So I go based on ESPN's rankings just cause that's the site that my league is hosted through. And after the top 10, in their overall are all position players, which makes sense. And then you go, and I'm assuming all 10 of them are going to be off the board. If one of them falls to 12, then cool. I'll take Giancarlo Stanton or Carlos Correa or Paul Goldschmidt, whatever. But after that, it gets a lot more dicey in terms of who do you like and who do you not like. Because I said Kershaw and Scherzer are right there. And then it's Chris Bryant, Manny Machado, Kluber and Sale, Joey Votto, Freddie Freeman, Francisco Lindor. And generally what I like to do, how I approach it, is I load up a little bit more on the positional side, but especially when I have the back-to-backs, I kind of like to go pitcher-hitter, at least for the first couple rounds, get a couple good aces, and then focus on positional, and then fill out my rotation kind of later in the draft. So that's why I sit there and I say, okay, Bryant, Machado, Votto, who I love, Freeman and Lindor. I think the draft that I wound up happiest with, I ended up my first round, I went Scherzer, Votto. And then especially if you wind up with a bunch of kind of dinger heavy or stolen base heavy, but low OBP guys, because I have an OPS as a category in my league. Votto kind of helps balance that because his OPS is going to be insane. And if you take like a Chris with a K Davis or even Moncada really late, like I mentioned, and, you know, or just one-dimensional players, D. Gordon, et cetera, Votto is well-rounded enough in like every aspect of fantasy that it kind of helps anchor your lineup a little bit more. I like having the well-rounded top draft picks.
I think the way the pitchers are distributed this year, it makes sense if you're picking at the turn at the back end to grab one of them. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that it makes sense to do two.
Yeah. It just seems fun.
At the turn, it is fun to grab, to like block out a specific thing. Like, hell, you could grab D. Gordon and Billy Hamilton and win steals all of a sudden, not right. all at once. But, I had the number one pick last year in my dad's league, the huge Roto league. Mm-hmm. So I took Trout one.
It's completely redraft, right?
Yeah, I took Trout one, and then, you know, 26 picks later, there was this huge run on middle infielders, just like all the way down to, you know, the seventh or eighth best shortstop and like the fifth or sixth best second baseman. And I was like, I didn't want to take two pitchers here, but I took Scherzer and Bumgarner. Bumgarner obviously biked off a cliff, but otherwise, you know, that would have worked like beautifully.
Yeah.
Ditto later in round six and seven, I think there was I was like, man, I could really use an outfielder, and there's this crazy run on outfielders. I'm like, well, I'm not going to pick like a worse one. I don't want to be at the end of a run. Like, that's stupid. And yeah. I took Kenley Jansen and Zach Britton. Obviously Zach Britton didn't work out, but like, that wasn't like a foreseeable thing. I could have just, you know, you're in a position where you can, you know, pay attention to where the draft is going, I guess. And just don't lock yourself into anything. Like, go in, have some things that you want to do, some players that you like. But I think if you're really rigid, right, you let's say you're sitting there at 12 and you're like, I want to take two pitchers. Let's say you do. I mean, just as an example, what if for some reason somebody takes Kershaw number three and it freaks everyone else out? And then Scherzer, Kluber, Sale, Syndergaard are all gone by the time you get there. Like, what? Are you going to take Archer? And
yeah,
like,
no. Then I'm going to take one of those top 10 guys like, who fell to me.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, that's kind of a weird example, but I think it illustrates the point.
Yeah. No, it definitely does. People do panic. I see that with – I think the best example of that for me every year is with closers. Someone will draft Kenley Jansen – and then someone will draft – who's the second-best closer out there? I'm blanking.
It's probably Kimbrel right now.
Yeah, Kimbrel. Jansen, Kimbrel. And then all of a sudden, okay, Chapman's gone. Ozuna's gone. Neville's gone. Edwin Diaz is gone. And you're like, shit, I need a closer. Screw that. I wait on closers every single year, and I'm looking at it this year, and I'm like, oh, cool, Brad Hand is the 14th-ranked closer. Oh, cool. Jiri's Familia is the 17th ranked closer. Mark Melanson, who, you know, is a year removed from being a really good closer from a saves perspective, is 18th. Hector Neris is 21st. Kelvin Herrera is 23rd. I'll be happy grabbing any of those closers really late in the draft. Brandon Morrow is probably going to close for the Cubs, right? He's 27th ranked closer.
The thing with that is it depends on your league and not just rules, but tendencies. And I did, like, last year, I think if Britton hadn't gotten hurt, my strategy would have worked really well. So for a long time, I was like, all right, I want to grab one solid closer, a guy who's going to keep his job, and I think is a good pitcher as well, not just a guy who's a closer because he happens to be there. And then I was like, and I'll fill in the other guy like late. And typically those that league, people carry two closers. And I realized, I was like, well, what's the point of drafting the first elite guy if the second guy is going to drag, you know, just drag me down to the middle of the pack anyway?
Sure.
And I was like, well, if I'm either going to, you know, I should only do two guys and, you know, try to patch it as the year goes on, or grab two guys who are awesome. And I was in a position to do that last year. I mean, Grant, like I said, Britton got hurt, didn't work out the way I wanted, but I don't think it was stupid to think Britton would have been really good last year.
No.
At draft day. So, you know, I was in a position where I got like the two of the three or four best guys at the position instead of taking the 12th best second baseman at that point, or the, you know, 40th outfielder. And what sucks about relievers is they, depending on your format, they only do like the one thing for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. They should help your rate stats. And if you get a Kimbrel or a Jansen or a Chapman, like they'll give you an edge in K's over everyone else can able to, I guess. But, it doesn't feel good, right? Like it doesn't feel good to do it. But I'm starting to talk myself into like wanting to. That's what's nice about the turn is you can do it before anyone can stop you, right?
Yes.
If nobody else is going for it, you can just be like, "All right, you know, these next dozen outfield bats all look pretty fungible to me."
Absolutely.
Jansen and Kimbrel are clearly like head and shoulders above everyone else, and you know, Chapman. All right, I probably hurt myself in fantasy leagues. I never want to own guys like, you know, like known jerks like Chapman.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I can't pick a guy who it was the same thing in fantasy football last year. I couldn't bring myself to draft Joe Mixon in any league, you know.
Yeah, it's like it's not fun. No. I play
I don't
fantasy
root for a guy
fun.
Who sucks.
Yeah, it's so rare that there's no other option.
Yeah.
That's one thing
like I mean, I think that if you want to pick nits, someone could probably look through your roster and be like, oh yeah, well, why'd you draft him? He had this stupid tweet one day. But so obviously you have to kind of pick and choose in that sense. But yeah, some of the really obvious ones, it's just like, absolutely not. One of the things I was going to say is I think I realized as we were talking that I said, well, I don't really like drafting starting pitchers early. And well, I don't really like drafting closers early. And it's like, well, where the hell do I get my pitchers? And I realized that it goes back to what you said about how much turnover there is among the elite in pitchers. And I think one of the reasons I do that is because I am a psychopath who has no life. And if someone gets hurt or loses their job, I'm the first person on the waiver wire every single time. So that helps fill out those kind of pitching gaps because it's like, oh no, you know, the Craig Kimbrel's hurt. And then I'm the first person to go on and pick up whoever's next in line for saves for the Red Sox, you know?
Sure. There's that. But there's also like, I think post hype prospects are really good. You know, everyone's like, oh, I want all these great prospects so I can pick them up. And in redraft leagues, even the best prospects are like not great in their rookie years. So you can wind up really hurting. Like you'd be better off taking Neil Walker than Yoan Moncada last year, you know, and that's like boring, but you know, that's how it goes. But I think it's really important to sock away. If you remember like Aaron Nola, right? Like Aaron Nola was a dude who was like, yeah, everyone's like, yeah, he's a good prospect. And he kept kind of like getting a little bit better and a little bit better. And his DRA is like way better than his ERA. And that's someone where like you could get ace level production out of someone you take later. If you can find someone like that, Rodon before the health issues, like I think could have been someone like that. If you can remember the prospects from like 2 years ago
100%.
Who have had a little bit of time to figure things out. Severino is a pretty extreme example of that.
The example that happened for me was Will Myers.
Yeah.
After his 2014 and 15 seasons, I grabbed him in like the 20th round in 2016. I mean, he wasn't like carrying my team, but for someone you grab that late and had, you know, he still had some positional flexibility between first base and outfield, I think, that year, and that was awesome, you know, and that dude was like the number one prospect in baseball just a few years earlier.
Yeah, and you gotta, you know, look at your how much risk you want to assemble, right? Like, if I'm choosing between Eduardo Rodriguez or J.A. Happ, do I just need decent innings? Because Happ's a really much better bet for that. Do I need to hope that did I wait on pitching and I need to hope that there's a guy who could do a little more rather of Eduardo Rodriguez? So, you know, it's really situational, but just, yeah.
Yeah, Jameson Taillon is a name that I'm targeting this year in that same kind of sense, where I just feel like a fantasy writer I follow on Twitter was going on a rant about this, about Taillon versus Jose Berrios, and how Berrios is going like 80 spots ahead of Taillon in average draft position. And I get it. I mean, with Berrios, you obviously have, you know, the strikeout potential is super enticing there. But, like, relative to draft position, I way more trust Taillon to be good in 2018 than I do Berrios.
Yeah, I mean, Taillon, I mean, I'm glad it seems like he's all right. I had him last year, and I picked him up late, and I felt super, you know, clever. Yeah. And then obviously, like, last year, God, that team was so snake-bitten. Like, Bumgarner, but, like, all these injuries that don't make any sense. Like, you know, poor guy gets cancer, and, like, Mike Bumgarner decides, like, he's, like, the BMX bandit or something.
Yeah, guys. I can live with that. Well, maybe not in the moment, but in general, with how you feel about your fantasy production, I can more easily live with my team being, you know, taken down by injuries than just drafting shitty, you know. And last year I feel like I had my worst fantasy baseball season in a decade, and it was because I drafted shitty.
It doesn't feel good. It really doesn't feel good when you're like, evals were wrong and you reached on guys, as opposed to, like, I think one year I started with, it was the year, I think it was 2015, I took Stanton 3 overall, I took Harper in the second round, that was the year he did his like Ted Williams thing. And then I picked Michael Brantley to start the third round, and I was like, feeling super. And for the first like 2 months of the year, I was smoking everybody. And then Stan got like hit in the face with a pitch, and Brantley like decided he was going to be injury prone. I was like, for the first time, you know, like he hadn't been before.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just happens. Like, but like those three dudes were killing it. it wasn't a bad plan.
Definitely.
It just didn't work out.
All right. Yeah. Well, that was fun.
I'm happy to build more of that in. Maybe next week we can check in after our first draft. So.
Yeah, my draft isn't until, well, who knows when we're going to record again. We always say next week, like we've been doing this on a weekly basis, which would be awesome. We try for it, but.
You know, still says their daily podcast.
What?
The Tino podcast, they still say they're daily. They post about as frequently as we do.
Oh, really? Yeah. My first draft is a week from Sunday, so. I say my first draft. It's also my only draft now. I used to be in like 6, and now I'm in 1.
I try to hold the line at 2. I might be doing 3 this year.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know how, you know, if listeners like or don't like our fantasy talk. Some of it is very self-indulgent. I'll be honest, most of it, almost maybe all of it, is self-indulgent. But it is cool. And if people like this, I'd enjoy talking more about podcasts on future or. Fantasy on future podcasts.
Yeah, tweet at us. See, let us know if that's a thing.
Yeah. Anything else, Nick?
Carlos Gonzalez is really close to a 1-year deal with the Rockies. So, hey, you know, when we podcast,
baseball moves happen. Man, that's kind of anticlimactic for Moustakas to go back to Kansas City and Cargo to go back to Colorado.
Yeah, I don't know if Cargo's going to get enough playing time in that outfield. Oh, that sucks for Tapia
and Dahl.
Dahl, yeah, geez. And Ian Desmond. the Rockies. Yeah. Cool, but no, that's where I'm at.
All right, well, we'll see if my goal for next podcast is to limit my spring training stat sighting down from, I think, like 3 this week to 0. So I'm going to work on that in the meantime.
That's all I'm going to do.
All right. Well, we'll talk to everyone later. Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Good night, everybody.